All right, tonight we're going to have a look at some aspects of Bible prophecy that we've been through, but not for some time. I did give it at the Vogue about 3 months ago, so might be one or two that might have to bear with us. But we're going to have a look at the story of two brothers called Esau and Jacob. We're going to identify them through the background and then bring it right through to more modern time. And we're going to ask to start with, if you would, to open up to the book of Romans in chapter 9. Romans chapter 9. And we're going to start by reading in verse 6. Paul the Apostle has a great concern in his heart in the writings here to the Romans. And he has to, as he says, speak the truth concerning Israel and the children of Israel. He has a great sorrow in his heart for them because he knows that they've rejected the one who is the Christ. They've been the ones that have rejected the righteousness of God. And along this line in this particular chapter, he talks about how important it is to be the children of the promise of God, and not just by ancestry, because they are the seed of Abraham, is that adequate. In fact, at one point there, John the Baptist said that God could make of the stones the children of Israel. And their idea of trying to say because of our ancestry we are automatically right with God is not in keeping with the promises that God made to Abraham through faith, through belief. And so we're going to see here that there, again, is an illustration of the sorting out of the seed of the children of Israel into, again, two brothers, both born of the same parents, and yet one loved the Lord and was intent on having everything that God could give him, and the other put no value or disregarded his relationship with God. And yet they're of the same stock. And God was interested in the one that was interested in him, namely, of course, Isaac, and then through Isaac to Jacob or Israel. So we pick it up here in verse 6, and we read, "Not as though the word of God had none effect, for they are not all Israel, which are of Israel." Now we know the word Israel means to be a ruler or a prince of God. And it's saying here that just because of the stock, they're not all ruling or on the side with God. And it says, neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children, as we just described before. And they're not all children. But it says, in Isaac shall thy seed be called. And if we relate the story, of course, of Abraham, he basically had the two initial children, one by a bomb woman called Hagar, who's the Ishmaelites, or the father of the Arabs. And then the other was Isaac by his real wife, his first wife, which of course is Sarah. And what it's saying here again is that they are the ones through the flesh, which are from Hagar, and they are the ones that are of the seed that God promised to be the seed through Sarah. And so it's God is separating out here as we were reading this account here. It says, for going again in verse 7, neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all true children, it's meaning, but in Isaac, through Sarah, shall thy seed be called. That was promised before that even Sarah was with child, for many years before she was with child. And it says, that is, they which are of the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God. And later on, particularly in Galatians, we see the illustration of Hagar and Ishmael as being the children of the flesh and not the children of promise once again, the allegory between that which is of the world and that which is of God. It says, but the children of the promise are counted for the seed. In other words, God sorts out and sifts out those that belong to him. For this is the word of promise, that at this time will I come and Sarah shall have a son. This is exactly what God had already said to Sarah and to Abraham. And not only this, going one step further, but when Rebekah,
who was married to Isaac, the son, this the one that they were waiting for, conceived by one, even by our father Isaac. For the children within the mother, Rebecca, were not yet born, and neither having done either good or evil in their life, because their life hadn't really begun. But again, it says that the purpose of God, according to the election or the selection of God, might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth. It was said unto her, unto Rebekah, that the elder shall serve the younger, as it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. And the two children, by this union of Isaac and Rebekah, these twins, were Esau and Jacob within her womb at the one time. However, we see the difference as far as God is concerned. Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. And the word hated, if you look up the meaning in the Greek, means disregarded, because he put no value on his relationship with his God. What shall we say then? Is there any unrighteousness with God? God forbid. God always wants righteousness to be the measure of a person that relates to him, a right standing with him. And so we see again that at one particular point there in John, when the children of Israel were claiming, they're talking to Christ, of their descendancy down from Abraham, we be of Abraham's seed. He says, well, if you were of Abraham, you wouldn't be seeking to kill me. But he says, spiritually, he meant, you're of your father, and your father is the devil. That's what he said to them, you're of your father, the devil. And it's like people today that often say to us, well, you know, you go and witness to them, you tell them about the word of God and the things of the Lord, and they say, oh, you know, but I'm born a Catholic. And, oh, you know, the old saying is, I'm born a Catholic, I'll die a Catholic. Well, if they keep that attitude, that's what they will be. But they won't be saved because they've not attended to the word and the direction of God. Many of them will say they love God, but God says, if you love me, you've got to keep my commandments. And the whole point is that the election of God is truth, and if you know the truth of the word, the truth will set you free. That's what the Bible teaching is all about. That we're to receive that spirit of promise that makes us sons and daughters of the living God by the promises of God. And we are Abraham's seed through those promises. So let's look back now. We've given sort of a bit of an overview of the way that God looks at things. And we'll go back to Genesis chapter 25. And we're looking at the story of these twin brothers, Esau and Jacob. Chapter 25 and verse 19. It says, and these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac. And Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the son of Bethuel the Syrian of Paddan Aram, and the sister to Laban the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. So not only did his mother have trouble conceiving, Sarah, but we find here that Isaac had to go and inquire of the Lord because Rebekah was not with child either. And the Lord was entreated of him or listened to him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. Verse 22, and the children struggled together within her. And she said, if this be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. She felt the struggle going on within her womb. And so she went to talk to the Lord about it. And the Lord said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner or different type of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other, and the elders shall serve the younger. Now, it's rather interesting, of course, all this relates and is confirmed by history. And this was long only a matter of probably months before the children were actually delivered, but certainly long before their lives showed the direction that they were going to go. But, of course, our God knows the end from the beginning. And from ancient times, as it says, the thing's not yet done. And so he prophesies here that there's two different type of people within him, within her. And there were two different types that would represent different nations. And one would be stronger than the other, but the one that would be the greater would not be the older of the twins, but the younger of the twins. Verse 24, we go on to read, and when her days were to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first one came out red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob, and Isaac was 60 years old, or 60 years old, when she bare them. Now we see even right at this point, not only was the struggle within the womb between these two that obviously didn't get on with each other even in the womb, but as Esau is being born, out of the mother's womb comes a hand holding on to his brother Esau, not wanting to let go. And his name was therefore called Jacob. The word Jacob actually means the one who will supplant or take the place of another. Jacob means the supplanter. And that's why later on, when he had that relationship with God, that God changed his name to Israel, which means, as we said, to be a chief or a ruler with God. So this was the two boys. In verse 27, and the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter and a man of the field. So he was very much out in the field and hunting the venison and the game, which his father enjoyed, the fruit of his labour. But Jacob was a plain man, and he dwelt in tents. He was one that stayed home. The other one liked to get out in the field. We read much later on in verse 29, and Jacob, being a homebody, didn't like cooking. He's cooking here sod pottage, which actually means a red type stew. And so he's cooking this sod pottage, and Esau comes in from the field, obviously been hunting for some time, and he was faint or feeling weak. And Esau said to Jacob, "Feed me, I pray thee, with that same red pottage, for I am faint." And therefore his name, therefore was his name called Edom. So Esau's name's changed here to Edom. And the reason it's given that name, it's identified by the food that he was to eat. Edom, if you look in the margin, it says, with that same red pottage. Edom means red. So his name's changed in that sense from Esau to Edom, or red. But Jacob, the supplanter, as we said he is, wanted to take opportunity here. And we read here that Jacob said, "Sell me this day thy birthright." And Esau said, "Behold, I'm at the point to die. And what profit shall this birthright do to me?" Or, "What good is it if I'm dead? I can't do anything with it. What good is it to me if I die? I'm so hungry, I feel I'll die." And so Jacob said, "Swear me this day." And he swore unto him, and he sold his birthright, or sold out his birthright to Jacob. The reason why he had it is Esau was the elder of the two sons, and he had that right as the elder of the two sons, but he had no value on it. And then Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils, and he did eat and drink and rose up, and he went his way. Thus Esau despised his birthright, or put no value on his birthright. And so we see here the background to it all. Esau, meaning hairy, is changed to Edom, meaning red, and Jacob is the supplanter, and he got part of what he wanted. He got the birthright, but there was something more that he wanted to have, as we're going to look on. If we go over to chapter 27 now, we're leaving things out for time. Chapter 27 and verse 34. And just to paraphrase what the events had taken place, is that what he really wanted now was to take the blessing of his father. He had the birthright, now he wanted his father to bless him at the time of the end. And that was done when they went before their father. And the elder of the two normally, or the principal one, had the hand placed upon them. And they received the birthright and the blessing. And they usually received in that time a double portion of the inheritance if there were a number of children. They got twice as much as everyone else if they received the blessing and the birthright. Now, of course, the problem was, at that particular time, we find that Jacob knew, and Jacob's wife, Isaac's wife, Rebekah, knew that to bring the young lad before his father would have presented a problem because he wasn't hairy. And so what they did is conceived a plan, and Rebekah was in on this, and they got some goat's hair and put it on the back of his hands and on the back and over the nape of his neck, so that when Jacob went in before his father to be blessed, because his eyesight was dim, that he would feel him and say, "Oh yeah, that's Esau, because he is hairy." And that's what happened. And in actual fact, he said, "Well, the body is of Esau, but the voice is of Jacob." So he knew this didn't seem right, but he still blessed him. Now, of course, the problem was, because he was the favorite son of Isaac, that when Esau came in, he found out that his brother had tricked him again and got the blessing from his father. And this is where we want to pick it up. We pick it up in verse 34. "And when Esau heard the words of his father, Isaac, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry. And he said unto his father, Bless me, even me also, O my father. And he said, Thy brother came with subtlety and has taken away thy blessing," is what that Isaac said. "And he said, Is he not rightly named Jacob, the supplanter? For he has supplanted me these two times, with the birthright and now with the blessing. Twice he's taken from me, took away my birthright, and behold, he has taken away my blessing. And he said, Hast thou not reserved a blessing for me?" Here we find Esau's asking his father, "Look, even though that's happened, can you still bless me, father?" And Isaac answered and said unto him, "Behold, I've made him thy lord. He's now over you because of what has happened. And all his brethren I've given to him for servants. And with corn and wine have I sustained him. And what shall I now do unto thee, my son?" And Esau said unto his father, "Thou hast but one blessing, my father. Bless me, even me, O my father." And Esau lifted up his voice and he wept. And Isaac, his father, answered and said unto him, "Behold, thy dwelling shall be as the fatness of the earth, and the dew of heaven from above. And by the sword shalt thou live, and thou shalt serve thy brother, and it shall come to pass that when thou shalt have dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke off from thy neck." And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing whereby his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father at hand, he's not going to last much longer. And when my father's gone, I will slay my brother Jacob." And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah, and she sent and she called Jacob, her youngest son, and said unto him, "Behold, thy brother Esau is touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing to kill thee." And basically she said, "Get out and run. Don't look back, because he'll kill you." And so she helped her son, Jacob, escape from the situation completely. But God knew what was going on, and it's a wonderful thought that comes out that we often refer to even for ourselves. And if we go to the next chapter, chapter 28 and verse 15, God reaffirms to Jacob that he is with him. And we read I'm only reading a verse out here, and it says, "Behold, I am with thee." This is the voice of the Lord talking unto him. "And will keep thee in all the places whither thou goest, and will bring thee again," or bring thee back unto this land. "I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of." And so he's saying here, God is saying, Jacob, I will never leave thee and I will never forsake thee. And of course, this is his promise he's made to us. He'll never leave nor forsake us. If we go over to chapter 36, I want to point out what happened to Esau a little bit further down the track, or a bit of a summary here. In verse 1, we read of chapter 36, now these are the generation of Esau who was Edom. What's Edom? Red. Keep that in mind. And Esau took his wives and the daughters of the daughters of Canaan and Adah, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, and Elobamah, the daughter of Anah, and the daughter of Zibeon, the Hivite, and Bashemath, Ishmael's daughter, the sister to Nebajoth, and so on, and who they bear to them. And we read down in verse 8, just for time, and thus Esau... or dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, in Mount Seir. And so we find one of the points we must make here is that this man greatly displeased God, not because just despising the birthright, but they were given instructions that they were not to intermarry with the pagan religions round about. And here we see that Esau took wives of two cursed lines, the cursed line of Ishmael and the cursed line of Canaan. And so he put no value on his relationship with God at all. He displeased by intermarrying into this line. And so he dwelt at a place called Mount Seir. And Mount Seir is a mountain range now in Jordan, in which there is a city called Petra. That was one of their main centres, the city of Petra. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But we'll go over now to the book of Numbers in chapter 20. Numbers chapter 20. There's more history we could have looked at, and it's, again, it's difficult to cover full subjects like this. There was a time when the Amalekites were fighting with the children of Israel, and Moses was there. And you know the story of Aaron and Hur, how that they held up the rod with Moses as he sat down. And when the rod went down, the Amalekites started to overtake the children of Israel. And when Moses' arm was up, then the children of Israel prevailed in the war. Now, the Amalekites, or those of Amalek, were actually descendants of Esau. And we see that this was a process, that Esau's descendants become a perpetual enemy against the children of Israel. We could have looked at other illustrations as well, but I just want to bring out a later time in history here in Numbers chapter 20 and verse 14. We're reading a time when Moses is going out of the bondage and he's going through the wilderness, time he smote the rock and the waters gushed forth, and then they're moving on to take the promised land or to possess the promised land. And they come to the border of Kadesh, where the king of Edom is. Who's Edom? Esau. And this is what we read of here. He knew that these were his brothers, but he also knew of the hatred that Esau had for Jacob. And so Moses, in verse 14, sent messengers from Kadesh unto the king of Edom and said, "Thy brother Israel," or Jacob, "thou knowest all the travail that has befallen us, how that our fathers went down into Egypt." This is talking about Israel and his sons went down into Egypt, "and how that we dwelt in Egypt a long time, and the Egyptians vexed us and our fathers, and that they made them slaves in Egypt. And when we heard we cried unto the Lord, he heard our cry, and he sent an angel and has brought us forth out of Egypt. And behold, we're in Kadesh, a city at the uttermost border of in the uttermost of thy border. Let us pass, I pray thee, through thy country. So here we say Moses representing Jacob or Israel, and he's saying, look, I want to just pass through and I want your permission to go through your land. And it says, and we will not pass through the fields or the through the vineyards, and neither will we drink of the water of the wells. We'll go by the king's highway, and we will not turn to the right hand nor to the left until we've passed thy borders. And Edom said unto him, thou shalt not come past by me, lest I come out against thee with a sword. And the children of Israel or Jacob said unto him, we will go by the highway, and if I or my cattle drink of the thy water, then I'll pay for it. I will only, without doing anything else, go through on my feet. I'll just quickly get through your land. I'll go through. And he, Esau, or the king of Edom, said, thou shalt not go through. And Edom came out against him with much people and a strong hand. And thus Edom refused to give Israel, or Esau refusing to give Jacob in this type, passage through his borders, and therefore Israel or Jacob turned away and went right round the outskirts so they never went near his brother. And it just shows this hatred that had really developed of the descendants of Jacob by Esau's descendants. Well, did it improve? Well, the answer is no. Let's have a look now over further in the Old Testament to the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 35. Ezekiel 35 and verse 1. We read here, moreover, the word of the Lord came unto me. This is coming unto Ezekiel the prophet. And the word of the Lord says, son of man, which is Ezekiel the prophet, set thy face against Mount Seir. Now, we already said who lived in Mount Seir. It was Esau. And it says, and prophesy against it, against Mount Seir, the capital of where Esau was at the time. And say unto it, thus saith the Lord God, behold, O Mount Seir, I am against thee, and I will stretch out my hand against thee, and I will make thee most desolate. I will lay thy cities waste, and thou shalt be desolate, and thou shalt know that I am the Lord. Why is he doing this? Well, the answer is in verse 5. Because thou hast had a perpetual hatred. Or if you have a marginal reference there, it says, because you've had a hatred of old, a hatred that goes back of Esau against his brother Jacob, as we read in Genesis. Because thou hast had a perpetual or a hatred of old, and has shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword, in the time of the calamity, in the time their iniquity had an end. Therefore, as I live, saith the Lord God, I will prepare thee unto blood, and blood shall pursue thee, and seeth thou shalt not hast not hated blood, even blood shall pursue thee. Thus I will make Mount Seir most desolate, and cut off it from him that passeth out, and him that returneth, and fill his mountains with slain men, and so on, as it describes it quite clearly here. So we see, and if we look to the next chapter too, that it actually reaffirms the promises and the blessings that Jacob would receive. But the prophecy continues if we go over to the book of Obadiah, just over a little bit further in the Old Testament. Obadiah. Just after the book of Amos and just before Jonah. And he takes over a little over a page in the writing. Just between Amos and Jonah. If you find one, just go between the two. Obadiah, I won't tell you which chapter, but we'll start in verse 1. And it says, the vision of Obadiah, this is again another prophet of the Lord, Thus saith the Lord God concerning Edom or Esau. We've heard a rumor from the Lord. An ambassador is sent from among the heathen. Arise ye, let us rise up against her in battle. Behold, I've made thee small among the heathen, and thou art greatly despised. Esau was greatly despised. Mount Seir was despised. It was on the caravan trade routes, and they had to come into the likes of Mount Seir to get water and commodities, and they took taxes of all the goods that they used to trade, particularly over into the Asian region, and then they'd come back through, and the trade routes used to go straight via Mount Seir. And so they were very much hated amongst even the heathen nations round about because of their taxing and their attitudes. But the Lord is judging them here, and it says in verse 3, "And the pride of thine heart has deceived thee. Thou hast dwellest in the clefts of the rock, whose habitation is high, who saith in his heart, who shall bring me down to the ground? And though thou exalt thyself as the eagle, and though thou hast set thy nest among the stars, thence will I bring thee down. And if robbers come to thee, if thieves come to thee, if robbers by night, how are they cut off? Art they cut off? And would they not have stolen until they had had enough? And if the grape gatherers came to thee, would they not leave thee some grapes?" And so how are the hidden things, or that means the hidden things of Esau searched out? How are his hidden things sought up? And it says, "And all the men of the confederacy have brought thee, even to the border, and the men that were at peace with thee that have deceived thee and prevailed against thee, and they that eat bread have laid a wound under thee, and there is none understanding in him." So the Lord just hasn't got any time at all for Esau in Mount Seir. And it says, "Shall I not in that day," in one day, saith the Lord, "even destroy the wise men out of Edom, and the understanding out of the Mount Seir of Esau?" And then it goes on, and why again, verse 10 just summarizes it. It says, "For the violence against thy brother Jacob, shame shall cover thee, and thou shalt be cut off forever." Now, of course, if we look at the history of it all, Mount Seir was in this rugged mountain range and very, very high, hundreds of feet high. And the mountains were all one color. And you can guess what the color is. They were red. And there was a very narrow opening, like just a very single opening that went right through the wall into the valley where Mount Seir or Petra is. And it was so narrow that just a few soldiers inside could hold off thousands and thousands of troops outside. They couldn't get in because they couldn't get through this little narrow opening because it was so easy to protect it. And yet what they did, and the Romans eventually did it, they cut off their water supply, and eventually they had to come out. And when they came out, they destroyed completely the city of Petra. And the city of Petra today is not inhabited except by the reptiles and by the jackals. And it fulfilled the prophecy that the city of Mount Seir will become a desolate place forever, like Babylon when it was judged by God itself. And the mountains were a guard unto them and protected them. But they were always, looking at the history of them, idol worshippers. They were quite pagan in their belief. And so Mount Seir and Esau in that sense was destroyed. But it wasn't the end of it, because even though that happened and God had them judged and the city made desolate, they're going to rebuild. We go over now to the last chapter. And the last chapter of Malachi, the first chapter of Malachi, the last book, I should have said, in the Bible. Malachi chapter 1. Or if you've got some Italian blood, you might call it Malachi. Chapter 1 and verse 1. The burden of the word of the Lord to Israel. This is a message to Israel by Malachi. I have loved you, saith the Lord. Yet ye say, Israel, ye say, wherein is thou loved us? Or how have you loved us, God? And so God says, was not Esau Jacob's brother, saith the Lord, and yet I loved Jacob. And I hated Esau, and I laid his mountains, Mount Seir, and his heritage, his dwelling place, for the dragons or the reptiles of the wilderness, the lizards, etc. And whereas Edom saith, we are impoverished, but we will return and build the desolate places, saith the Lord of hosts. And they shall build, and I will throw down, and they shall call them the border of wickedness, and the people against whom the Lord has indignation forever. And your eyes shall see, and ye shall say, that the Lord shall be magnified from the borders of Israel. It's telling us here that history is not finished yet. There's going to be another conflict that will involve Esau against his brother Jacob. It's going to happen over Israel. And the moment that Esau attacks Israel, God's fury will come up in his face. But before we mention that, let's go back and see how that there was this hatred there. Later on, it came out in history as well. Let's go back to Psalm 137. Psalm 137. We're actually reading earlier in history of the time in which Nebuchadnezzar took captive the children of Judah, as it divided up into the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And the house of Judah was taken captive by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon in 604 BC and for the next few years. The children of Judah were taken captive into Babylon, to the city of Babylon, and there they were made slaves. And you might know the words that are here of Psalm 137 because they were part of a hit tune. By the rivers of Babylon, verse 1, where we sat down and we wept when we remembered Zion or Israel. We hanged our harps in the willows in the midst thereof, for there we were that they carried us away captive and required of us a song. And they that wasted us required us of us mirth, saying, sing one of the songs of Zion. And they weren't happy. They didn't want to be happy. They couldn't sing because they weren't in their own land. And so they said in verse 4, this is Israel, how shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land, being of course Babylon? Lest I forget thee, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth. If I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy. They just wanted to go home to Jerusalem and remember, O Lord. And this is the point I want to bring out. Remember, O Lord, the children of Edom or Esau in the day of Jerusalem, in the very day that Nebuchadnezzar attacked Jerusalem. Esau was on the inside of the city. And Esau said, raise it, even to the foundation thereof. And so even at that time of the captivity, and even though that many of them have been living in Jerusalem, we find that when Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar comes on the scene, they wanted every vestige of the city of Jerusalem raised completely to the ground. They wanted to destroy completely their brother Jacob. And that's what it's bringing out here. And, of course, the story continues through. And if we have a look at the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, you might remember the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem and the time of AD 70. After the time of Christ, You might remember when Jesus said that the temple in Jerusalem, that not one stone would be left upon another, but that it would be thrown to the ground. In AD 70, Titus the Roman attacked Jerusalem, and inside the city walls were 20,000 Edomites. But as the Romans were coming into the city of Jerusalem from the inside, Esau's descendants were killing the Jews in their hundreds because Esau hates Jacob. And we even see the story is even greater because when the king that was made the king at the time of the birth of Christ was Herod. Herod was not a true stock of Judah. Herod was an Idumean, Esau Jew. And when he heard the wise men, when they said, you come and you tell us where this king is that's born. When you find him, come back and tell us and we'll come back and pay homage to him. And the wise men were so wise they went another way. And that's why that Herod was so wild that he tried to kill every male child under 4 years of age. Because he wanted to stop the Messiah. It was Esau's descendant, Herod, trying to destroy Jacob. And the history has continued on, and we find that even today, if you go to Jerusalem, there are parts of Jerusalem that are occupied by what is called the Sephardim Jew. The Sephardim Jew is the true stock of the Jewish tribe of Judah. Others are Ashkenazim or Idumean. They've got Esau blood in them. And the Sephardim doesn't like to mix, and even in World War II in the prison camps, the Sephardim separated from the Ashkenazims. If we have a look at the formation now, where did Esau go? He was to go to the impoverished country and he was to build it up again. He went north of the land of Israel. And in 1917, the very year that Jerusalem was delivered by Lord Allenby of Megiddo, we find that Esau started his move because it was the Russian Revolution of the Bolsheviks, the same year of 1917. And the Russian Revolution was led ostensibly by two men, Nikolai Lenin and Trotsky. The thing that is fascinating about this story is that Lenin and Trotsky are Esau Jews. Lenin's real name was Ulyanov and Trotsky's name was Bronstein. They were Esau Jews. And when they took control of the country and brought in socialist communism, it was Trotsky that decided on the colour of the nation by changing the army to be the Red Army. And from that time, Esau became part of an impoverished land that is built up again to the extent that it is. In the book of 2 Ezra, it talks about a time will come when the red star will pour out all wrath upon the earth. In the square in Moscow, there's a big 14-foot red star in the city itself. But it's rather interesting, the history is going to repeat itself as well. Because if we have a look just briefly back to Jeremiah for a moment, and we're on to Jeremiah. Jeremiah and chapter 50 and verse 9. Now, in the Bible, it talks about in the book of Revelation of how that the great system of Babylon, Mystery Babylon the Great, is going to be destroyed once more. We know that the symbol of the Babylon of old and the symbol of Babylon of the new is the lion with eagle's wings. And the destroyer of it in ancient times was the bear. And the destroyer of it in the modern time will also be the bear. And just to make out these parallels here, we read in verse 9, it says, "For though I will raise up and cause to come against Babylon an assembly of nations from the north country," the Medo-Persians came from the north of Babylon. And it goes on to say, "And they set themselves in array against her," against Babylon. "From thence she was taken, and their arrows shall be as of a mighty expert man or a mighty destroyer, and none of them shall return in vain." When Babylon was destroyed by the north people of the Medo-Persians that have a symbol of a bear, they were a mighty destroying nation. We go over to verse 16. We read here, "And cut off the sower from Babylon, and him that handleth the sickle in the time of the harvest, for the fear of the oppressing sword. And they shall turn every one to his people, and they shall flee every one to his own land." And so the bear comes down and he harvests with the sickle. And then in verse 23, it says, "How is the hammer of the whole earth cut asunder, and how is Babylon become a desolation among the nations." I talked of history repeating itself, because in one day and one hour, mystery Babylon the Great, the eternal city, will be destroyed. It has the symbol, if you look at the appearance of the Pope in St. Peter's Square over the balcony, is his own flag of a lion with eagle's wings of Babylon. And what is going to destroy him with the sickle and the hammer of the whole earth? None other than the bear of the north country of Russia. It all gets back to Ezekiel 38 and the destruction that's going to take place as the bear comes down with a great confederacy and attacks the land of Israel. Before they do, they take a move over to destroy Christendom in their mind as they destroy modern Babylon. And then they move to destroy Israel. It is still a story of Esau hating his brother Jacob. Hating his brother Jacob. Let's go back to the book of Isaiah now, just to look at a couple of things now to finish. If we have a look in Isaiah chapter 62. Isaiah 62. Just the one verse here, it says, "For Zion or Israel or Jacob's sake, I will not hold my peace. And for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until the righteousness thereof go forth as the brightness and the salvation thereof as the lamp that burneth." And here it is talking here of a wonderful desire of the church to be part of all the promises of God as we're going to rule and reign with Christ from Jerusalem. And so for Zion's sake and Jerusalem's sake, God will not rest until all righteousness is part of Jerusalem. We go over to the next chapter, chapter 63 and verse 1. We see here again prophetically talking about Esau. "Who is this that cometh from Edom or Esau with dyed garments from Bozrah?" And Bozrah was a capital later of Edom or Esau. "This is glorious in his apparel." That is glorious in his apparel. "Traveling in the greatness of his strength. And I speak in the righteousness mighty to save. For thou art red in thine apparel." So here we see about the garments that are dyed red in Bozrah, the capital of Esau or Edom. "And thy garments are like him that treadeth out the wine fat, gone into the wine press and tread out the grapes, and the redness has stained all the garments." And it says, "I," in verse 3, "have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me." Now here we see Jesus Christ coming with the power to save and to deliver and to set free. He trod out the winepress himself alone. "And there was none with me. And I will tread them in mine anger and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment. For the day of vengeance is in my heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. And I looked, and there was none to help, and I wondered, and there was none to uphold. And therefore mine own arm brought salvation, and my fury it upheld me. And I will tread down the people in mine anger, and made them drunk in my fury, and I'll bring down their strength to the earth. And what we're reading of here is that one day Jesus Christ comes, and those that have opposed, particularly Esau, that is tried even at the time of the end, as we related unto the great northern red confederacy that will take the land of Israel, that Jesus Christ says, in my heart, I'm going to be there for my elect, and they're going to be with me, and the year of my redeemed or my saved has come, as he comes through the clouds and claims his own. And all the people said, amen.